Anything combat with Johnny K.
But it's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show. I'm your host, Johnny K. Today, we've got a one championship fighter. We have the chef. Thank you, Pauline Cunan, for setting this appointment up. We got Luke Lessie on the show. Welcome back, brother.
Yo, what's up? It's good to see you again. It's been a minute. Yeah, you're a great interviewer, so I'm excited to talk to you, man.
Luke, from the previous time we spoke, I was surprised that you got Shane in for the camp for the Cody Jerome fight and the guys at Beacon. So why did you feel like that was necessary for your game and your career?
So how did the story with Peach and Shane come up? Peach is the owner of the gym out here, the coach. I came out here a year ago. Yeah, this month, a year ago. And I taught a seminar just because, like, Shane and I have known each other throughout the years. You know what I mean? Then we always wanted to, like, do something. And then my seminar started popping up. I made it out to Beacon. And then I just vibed with them so well. And, like, Coach Peach, the guy who's my head coach now, he's just, like, the thickest dude. So just kind of made a small connection there. And then for the whole last year, they've kind of been like invested in my career behind the scenes a little bit. Yeah, just like supporting me in like the little ways behind the scenes, breaking down opponents, coming out there for training or out here. And those little conversations of, dude, should I move out here? When it's like chirping back and forth, it becomes a little bit more real over time. And every fight, we were just communicating every single fight for the last year. And then I ended up getting divorced right after my last fight. And I'm like, let me just pull the trigger right now, get out of Iowa, spread my wings like once and for all. And the reason I chose them is because they already had this relationship. I'm in Coach Peach's house right now. I'm living with him. So the transition is the easiest, because it's only been a couple months. So go live with them, train with them, and they're helping support me. Yeah, pretty much like that's the story. Get divorced, and then it's like now's the perfect time to just go try this shit, follow my dreams, you know?
One thing that people appreciate about your journey is that your dad was your head coach for a very long time, and now the first time that you've moved into a new camp. So what did your dad say when you made this change?
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole thing with moving also, and not to like air out all my laundry, but it was with getting divorced, you know? So the whole thing wasn't necessarily like I lost a fight, I'm now leaving my dad. It was just a bunch of personal stuff. And I needed to get out of Iowa altogether, that whole environment. So, yeah, man, I mean, my dad's a busy man. He's back home running the gym. He also is an architect, so he has another business as well. And especially since I was helping him run the gym, he's a little bit more busy now that I'm gone. But, yeah, I mean, he's always going to be my coach. He's always going to be the guy who, you know, taught me everything. So, it's pretty much like just regular conversations here and there. He broke down my fight with me the last fight. He just didn't happen to be there in my corner. Every time I go back to Iowa, I train with him because I got my two kids in Iowa still. So, yeah, I mean, I basically kind of live here and there. I don't really live in Iowa, but I'm still going back and putting in work with my dad. It's just like this is home base now.
One thing I like about your style is that you're constantly making changes to it and constantly building upon the foundations that you already have. So now that you're working with Shane, what do you think he's done to improve your game?
Well, the thing with these guys out here, like, well, my main pad holder, Coach Peach, he taught Shane back when he was like 15. So he's the OG of this out here, and he's created the whole game plan. Not necessarily changing things that I'm doing, just actually taking the time, him and Shane, to focus on a game plan, because they know how talented I am. They know I can basically think of it like this. The movie Drumline, Nick Cannon, he hears a beat and he can drum it without reading the music. So they can tell me something. They can tell me a certain game plan. And because of my level, we don't have to go into depth of how to implement this, if this is making sense. So they're just giving me these tasks and telling me what to focus on because they're really watching my opponents a lot more than I have in the past. Of course, me and my dad studied our opponents, but we're working men in Iowa. We didn't have all day long to be studying. And, you know, Peach runs his gym full time. So he's watching a lot of fights. He's watching a lot of Muay Thai. And then Shane obviously is always studying. So they've just added a little bit more one championship specific tactics into my style, such as movement and evasion, which, is, like I said, that's always been in there. It's just them telling me this is the game plan for this fight. We think you should focus on that. And then me trusting them.
One thing you kind of pointed out about the gym was the rounds with Dmitry Varek. So
yeah,
I didn't really know too much about this fighter, but you said that, those rounds were really beneficial leading up to the fight. So can you, you let me know what was so important about working with him?
So he's the highest level fighter I've ever sparred, for sure. He's got over 200 fights, and he just moved out here, I think it's like a year ago, maybe two now. And he's in Philly. And, dude, over 200 fights, two-time IFMA Russian champion, and that's 145 pounds. So that's like a killer weight class. He's like fighting ties throughout his whole career, you know. And he fought Bukow. He beat Damian Trainer back when he was 17. And he's just like, he's just such a clean textbook fighter. Like, there's no fat on any of his techniques. And for me to spar someone like that, that's so precise, it just made my eyes so much better, my range and everything. Because when I'm sparring this cat, I got to be ready for any move at all. This dude can do anything. He's throwing a spinning heel kick from boxing range. And just having someone at such a high level, and no offense to my opponent, he wasn't on the level of Dmitry, so it gave me a huge confidence boost going into that fight because I got like 40 rounds in with him throughout the, you know, 5-week camp.
What was the feeling like finally getting that KO over Cody Jerome?
Oh, bro, it was crazy. Like, we were practicing this kick, which I've done for years. I've done this spot kick, this no switch left kick for years with my dad. And Coach Peach just yells, spot, spot. And then boom, my body just did it without even thinking. And that's always the shot that ends up like doing the most damage, the one where you're not really trying to knock them out. I won't say always, but a lot of the time when you're going for the knockout, you're forcing it, you don't get the knockout. And then a lot of times they're down there and you're like, is the fight going to be over now? That shot, that's really the one that put you down. And that's kind of how I felt as I'm running back to the neutral corner. I was like, wow, I can't believe that's the shot that folded him. And yeah, that's just literally that specific kick we focused on a lot in this training camp. And yeah, I don't know. My coaches saw that that was the opening and they were right, man.
You fought some absolute killers. You know, we've had Eddie Abasolo on the show. I've had Joe Nadawa, Bampara. These guys are great fighters. So you put up against Cody and you absolutely decimate this guy. So do you reckon that he's on the level of the one championship dudes because he's just been put in from Canada?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, of course, I'm not going to compare him to Joe Nadawa. Like, I'm a little bit more confident going against Cody because of the caliber of opponents he's fought and the caliber of opponents I've fought. But you can't really think like that because say Cody goes in his next fight and just knocks out Joe Nadawa or Bambi or anybody with a big right hand, people wouldn't be asking me this question, you know, and it's my job to make somebody look like they are not on my level. That's the entire job of the fight. So yeah, it's a combination of me completely leveling up, and it was also his debut. And I don't know how nervous he was. I know I was super nervous in my debut. I'm nervous every fight, but, you know, those bright lights can get to you a little bit, especially coming from Canada. That's similar from me coming from Iowa. So I'm sure he was feeling some big feelings. But, dude, like I said, I would have done that performance. You know, I would have tried my best to perform like that against anybody. Of course, I would have had a game plan against anybody, whether they're on Joe and Bambi's and Sitichai and Superbond and Taiwan Chai's level or not, because anybody can go in there and knock somebody out, and then you would be like, hey, you're the best now. You know what I mean?
So with that being said, after your first stint with ONE Championship, the three fights, and now you've had this one, what do you want to say to the bitches that keep doubting?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because it's like, it's a lose-lose when you are kind of a rising star, because you're either doing too good and the people you're fighting are tomato cans and then they're disrespecting the people you're fighting, or you're not doing good enough and you're fighting really good guys, but you're not beating them. So it's like you're in that in between where people either hate you because you're not destroying everybody, or you are destroying everybody and they're like, well, you're fighting cans. So I don't know what to say to the haters. All I know is it's like, I'm happy, man. I'm doing these awesome Muay Thai fights. I'm getting paid. People get to watch me. So you guys know I'm tough. You know I can bang with these strong guys. And then you know I had technique too, which I just displayed in the last one. So it's like, what else do you want from me, dude?
What do you think was the hardest part of the camp? Do you think it was just the work with Varek?
Well, like camp, I focused a lot on strength and conditioning this camp too. Like back in Iowa, it's just the environment. It wasn't there as much, the availability. And at this gym, we have a full-on CrossFit area in the facility. So I was doing circuits for cardio, strength and conditioning. I had 3 days a week. And I was just in the best shape of my life. Like, also, I worked with a mental performance coach. Shout out to Jerry Walsh at Shawshank Mental Performance. So I added a couple different things, just like small things like that, like just an actual protocol for like sprinting and cardio, and then mental performance once a week. So I think it's that. And then now that I'm out here, man, I can just focus on training. Like the life shit I went through, I'm kind of out here on my own now. So I have a lot more time to just train.
100%, dude. Like, I know that you were working with Peter Miller for your nutrition. And,
yep, still.
And that bumped up your game. And now you adding in the S&C, you did look more explosive in the fight. So, of course, you're going to continue that. What do you think that looks like for the next style fights that you have?
Yeah, like, I'll definitely be on, like, an off-season strength and conditioning thing. So, hopefully, my body keeps looking better. I keep getting faster and stronger. And the weight cuts keep getting easier, because this last one was the easiest weight cut. So I've been leaning out real good. And that's like the missing piece to the puzzle, is I was always a guy obsessed with my craft, focusing on the art. I mean, you know this from following me. It's all about how my shit looks, if it works, the real art of martial arts. But now I'm like adding this whole side to getting my body in shape. And I think it's that simple, because I haven't focused on it before. Now I'm putting such a focus on it, and it's only going to go up from the next fight. Like, that was only 2 minutes, and I didn't even break a sweat. So, and you know, if it gets into deep waters, I'm always ready to go. So now in future fights, if it gets into deep waters and clearly I'm in better shape, it's like, it looks like it's going to be better for me in these future fights.
I think this is the most interesting point in your career so far. You said that there was an opportunity knocking for this fight. And now I want to ask you, what do you think the next opportunity that will knock for the chef is?
I know that they want me back really soon. I'll just say that. Can't say anything more, but they want me back real soon. I'm hoping to get on one of the U.S. cards, you know, this next year, and really kind of get American Muay Thai even one level above what it is just this next year with one fight. And then, yeah, man, I think they're going to be asking me, because there's a lot of movement in the division this next week. You got Superbond, Taiwan Chai, Joe, Bambi. There's going to be questions. There's going to be names being dropped. So we'll just kind of stay updated, see what kind of fights people start calling out. But I'm really trying to not look forward and stay present, because then it's like my whole last couple of years, I've been like going to bed every night thinking about another man that I'm going to fight. You know, it's like, let me chill for a minute. When I get the call, I'll be in the gym training. Just trying to stay present and enjoy each. Like, I'm still enjoying my last performance, man. You know, it's only been 2 weeks and everyone's like, who's next? Who's next? It's like, chill. We got time, you know?
You know what I want to see? I want to see Shane in one championship. Do you think that his Muay Thai is legit enough and that they would give him a fight?
Yeah, we're going to get him a fight in one. We're going to try to, for sure. Dude, here's the thing. Shane is, he's just such a clean martial artist. He's got the brain. It's just about getting Shane in fight shape. You know, like, if he actually starts eating like a fighter, training 2-3 times a day, because he's already got the skills. It's just about putting these skills into, like, a fight camp. So, dude, like, if he starts getting a little dog in him, I don't know, because he's got a really good game, like, the actual martial arts game, thinking about it, breaking down things, because a lot of people underrate him just because he has only had, like, one fight how many years ago. It was like, how many times have we seen a guy who's been training for a long time has his first fight, and then he whoops ass? Because Shane's first fight, he was, like, 15, 16 or something like that. And he'd be training with me for his fight, dude. So that'd be sick, too.
That's too easy. Let me know, Luke. So seeing that you're such a chill guy, and we spoke about this a little bit on the previous episode we had. So with the mindset, you're nervous before the fight, and I feel like that keeps you switched on because you're so focused. So I saw in the Benpara fight, I saw just like a vicious part of your game. You know what I mean? I say that you were really able to put the kill switch on and really try and smash your opponent. So let me know, seeing that you are a calm guy, how were you able, did you find any difficulty trying to turn that on?
So I think comes a point in a fight where it's like, for lack of better words, it's like a fuck it moment where you're already in there. You're not going to get out of the ring. You still have a round and a half, one round left. So it's like, eventually, all the things that are happening, all these different feelings, the nerves, the adrenaline, the pain, the annoyance of not being on the winning side, it all comes together into like this giant ball of energy, for example. And this ball of energy can either go at your opponent and you really go for the win, or you just crumble and it, you know, it suffocates you. And luckily for me, I don't have an explanation why, but when I get to that, you know, screw it moment where it's like, you got to go, like, you're losing. If you keep fighting like this, you're losing. You got to go for it now, start swinging. I don't know where that comes from, bro. I think some people have something that you can't teach. Like, for example, Eddie, in his last fight, he dropped Eunice at the very end. There's something inside him that is like, when we start putting words and labels on it, it makes it smaller. It's like a certain switch in energy where you just stop thinking about getting your ass kicked. You stop playing it safe. And I think it comes from, like, honestly, I think that shit comes from your ancestors and, you know, what kind of lineage you had. And mine were Vikings and gladiators, bro, which a lot of people's ancestors were Vikings, of course. But I really try to channel that. Like, it's all about balance. So I'm a chill guy, but then in the ring, I can get into that warrior spirit and it just happens naturally. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a balanced person. And because I'm not like that in real life, I'm able to be like that in the ring. I'm not sure, man. The more I talk, the less sense it probably makes. But some people have that thing that you can't teach. A lot of people call it grit. And it's just, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't even know.
For anyone that hasn't seen the fight with Benpara, that's a really close fight at the very end. You're bleeding everywhere. You're going fucking wild.
So do you know what happened in that fight to my eye?
Yeah.
First round, he hit an elbow right here on my right eye, crushes my entire orbital socket. So the first round, I remember, it felt like your fucking head exploded. And then every jab that he threw was just absolutely painful. So I go back to the corner, after the first round, and my dad's like, you got to go for it. You got to knock him out. You got to finish this fight. And I'm like, already? It's only been the first round. I already got to go for the finish because my face was messed up, dude. And the whole fight, I had just had blood in my eye. I couldn't see out of my left eye the whole fight. Of course, hindsight's 20/20. It'll sound like excuses now, but yeah, I couldn't see out of this eye the whole fight. And if you really watch, you can tell because the final shot that he landed was directly in that blind spot where I couldn't see. I was like this, and the uppercut came right here where I couldn't see. But also, if you watch that fight, bro, like I said, I got into, I think you do just get out of body. You get into that flow state. Some people's flow state is savage. Some people's is, real pretty. And a couple of these last times, my flow state went, straight savage mode. And if you really watch, when I hit him, he looked way more hurt than when he hit me. He broke my whole face and I stayed standing up. And then, when I hit him, I thought I had him, man. I missed by an elbow by this much in the very end. And I almost had him. I think I'm the Nate Diaz of Muay Thai sometimes. I just run out of time, dude.
I feel like you need more rounds with these guys, Joe and now Dandy. I feel like, dude, when you cracked him with the elbow and then he kind of, he stumbled, he went flying. I feel like when they were checking you in the corner, even though you had the eye thing, I feel like they kind of stopped it a little bit premature, seeing that there was still a minute, 50 seconds to go. And I feel like with that momentum, you still got up. So if you're getting up, I think you should be allowed to continue. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was 30 seconds left, bro. And I was coming out. I was going to come out with some flying shit or something crazy. I was about to come out and just go nuts. But what happened was, if you watch it back, my knee buckled real quick. And that's when Olivier, I talked to him actually after the last fight. He always apologizes to me because he gets shit for that too, saying it was an early stoppage. And I was like, no. I tell all my homies, you were just looking out for me. Because my eye was completely shut, dude. And I think he looked at my face and he likes me. Me and him are homies. So he's like, fuck it. But my knee buckled too. And that's a big tell for people. If they see your leg buckle, a lot of times they'll call it because that's your equilibrium. And you're about to walk out and just get put to sleep. But yeah, man, I agree with you. It's me, dude. It's me. They should have just let it go. Especially watching my last two fights. They should have been oh, it's Luke. Just let it run.
Luke, you said that this is the first time that you're not putting pressure on yourself. And you said that that was a game changer. So what do you think the difference for you was, putting pressure on yourself versus not?
Dude, it's more literal than people are thinking. Putting pressure on myself, meaning I was in charge of a lot of my training before I came out here. My dad is my head coach, working with him every night, working in the gym with him every night. But that's one session a night. And a lot of, let me think back. One, two, three. So I would get 3 or 4 hours in with my dad of pads. And that's it. So a lot of times I'm just waking up, kind of doing my own schedule, running my own miles, taking care of the kids, going to open the gym, planning these workouts. And that's the type of pressure I was talking about putting on myself. And now out here, it almost makes me feel guilty that Peach and Shane and Jerry and DJ, all these coaches, want to be thinking about this for me, the numbers, the weights, the protocols, the times, all this stuff they're keeping track of. And that just takes the pressure off me. So I was for the first time, I'm not putting pressure on myself. And people may have thought I was going a little deep with that, which of course that too. But I'm simply just not having to think about being prepared so much. They're thinking about getting you prepared. Does that make sense?
Luke, seeing that you've had such an interesting journey with your job and then going into Muay Thai, what do you think was the hardest part of the journey so far for you?
Dude, honestly, we just got through it because all the buildup, getting to one championship, that was great. Happy to be there. The whole last year was, a blessing being in one championship. But then it's sometimes your personal life just fucking falls apart, dog. you know, and you still have this burning desire inside of you where it's like a lose-lose. You either give this shit up or you give up the dream that God planted in you. And it's like, what do you do when you come to that crossroads? Because not everybody can be happy. You're either going to disappoint certain people or you're going to disappoint yourself. And the hardest part of the journey is the balancing act of that. The people that have been with you for a long time, and then you knowing you need to go do something for yourself once and for all. And then it's like, yeah, you get a sick win and a sick 50K bonus, and it all feels like it pays off. But you never know when some shit's going to come crashing down, and you still got to go to the gym and train. It's simply, that's the hardest part. Keeping a good attitude every day in training is tough, man, because everybody goes through some bullshit. And that is like the truth, dude. Like, I got divorced and had to like be kicked to the curb and still find my way training, but that's nothing compared to what other people are going through, bro. I still have support from, you know, the mother of my kids and all that stuff. It wasn't messy or anything like that. So I consider myself lucky. But yeah, that being said, it's the hardest part. Like, just dealing with personal life stuff and still trying to be the best fighter in the world, it's a lot of pressure, dog.
Moving back to Muay Thai just for a second,
uh-huh.
with the chef Neeks and also the recipes that you make. So with your estimate right now of where you are in your progression of Muay Thai, would you say, in your own opinion, do you feel like you're at the midway point, the end? Where do you feel like you are in your progression? Because there's so much that you want to add and so much that you want to do to your game.
Let's see. I would say maybe just past midway. Yeah, maybe just past halfway, because, like, yeah, all of a sudden I feel like there's a lot more to unlock, you know, but I know that it's not anything crazy. Like, I don't have a lot of time to get that much better. It's got to happen right now. So that's why I think a little bit past halfway. But yeah, man, I think it's only been 4 fights with the small gloves, so I think I'm still going to be doing some cool shit in that game for sure. And then you see me go back to big gloves if I go back to kickboxing and we start seeing some old chef. And yeah, it'll be a whole fun experience. But yeah, I would say halfway, I think, maybe a little more.
Did you take anything from your dad's style?
Oh, I mean, of course. Like, he taught me since I was 4. It's like just the fundamentals and how he throws all of his techniques. That's where I learned it from. But the funny thing about me and my dad is, like, I was a rebellious kid by nature. So I'm trying to be different. Of course, my dad's like a hard nose. Diesel Noy was his favorite fighter. Ramon Deckers.
How good is fucking Diesel Noy, dude?
Ridiculous, dude. Ridiculous. But yeah, those were his biggest influences. And he tried to put them into me, like power. And that's where you see a lot of the grit comes from. It's like, as a little boy, I'm just getting my ass kicked with that type of mentality. So then I start, like, I don't know. I think it's like the video game energy, where I want to like be making sound effects, doing cool moves. I want people to like pick my character. I want to be people's favorite fighter. So then the energy started shifting away from like just being powerful and like going hard, of course, with clean technique and everything. But you get what I'm saying with the slow Thai power style. And I just started like kind of not switching it up, but just kind of having more fun with it, being a little bit more creative. And it's so funny because my dad does Filipino Kali, Jeet Kune Do, Jiu-Jitsu, Judo. So it's like, really, there's nothing I didn't learn from you. It's just when I do Muay Thai, I throw in all the things that he taught me. You know what I mean? And like that no switch kick, that's not really a Thai kick. That's kind of like a roundhouse kick to the body, no switch. But yeah, we got different styles. It's been cool over the years because, yeah, a lot of people like compare us. And then he fights like a little tiny Thai guy like Coban. You know who Coban is?
No, I've never seen Coban.
Oh, I'm trying to think. He's far as like this, just like a Thai guy. And I'm out here trying to do flashy shit. But yeah,
I feel like, just going back to your career, I feel like when you fought Eddie, because I had him on the show so many times, I feel like the fact that you guys were both from America and that you were around each other in the game at the, you know,
different events and stuff from the American scene. I feel like that was an important fight to happen for your career, seeing that there was so much history involved, even though you guys didn't really know each other. You just were around. So I feel like, are you happy that that fight took place, seeing that you two were like the best America has to offer in one championship?
Oh, yeah, dude. So we were homies before that fight and still homies. I've been down to train with him since the fight. I was training with him before his last fight. And the thing with Eddie, man, is like, so like, think about it like this. If I were to pick my favorite fighter, it's not going to be this fighter that is everybody's favorite. I'm not a bandwagon guy. So back in the CSA heydays, where people loved Kevin Ross, Joe Schilling, Chaz Mulkey, there was also this dude, Eddie Abasolo, in there that didn't get as much love. And I was like, ooh, I like that guy. Nobody really knows who that guy is. So back when I was like in high school and maybe even after that, but just years ago, Eddie was my favorite fighter. He's the only like favorite current fighter I've ever had. And then we are the same weight class. Eventually, he's pro, and I'm just a fan of his. And then he's fighting on these Triumphant cars, which were those first pro cars that I fought on. And then I went pro, and he was the champion of that promotion. And I was like, dude, am I going to ever fight Eddie? That's crazy. And throughout all the years, we were just, I was like always hitting him up, fanboying over him. And then, yeah, just met him at all those shows, became friends. And then we end up, actually, funny enough, my first pro fight was against one of his fighters. And I think at that moment, I remember it's funny. At that moment, I walked to the corner. He didn't really say anything to me. And I think he realized that I was competition at that moment in the corner where I ended up knocking out his fighter. And then, yeah, I think it's cool that we never fought on that lower level promotion, Triumphant. He had got the call up to one and vacated that Triumphant title. And then I went on to win that title. And then I got the call up to one. And then, like, so it all kind of like happened in a cool way. And I was excited. Like, that's a fight where I knew it would be fun. And there was like zero animosity going into that fight. I knew he would be hard to hit. And I told people, I was like, I like this motherfucker so much. Like, when I get in there, of course, I'm going to try to knock his ass out. But also, I wish it could be a draw. So, like, everybody wins and we just put on a sick display. And it kind of was a close-ass fight. I don't know. A lot of people say it was a sick fight. I don't know if people say that, like, oh, you whooped Eddie's ass. But I think it was a pretty close fight, and we both kind of, like, showed cool shit.
Luke, I want to get your gauge on this. Mr. Wong Fairtex recently said that the Thai fighters are getting a little bit too cocky and that they need to get back to training because they're getting beaten by foreigners. So yeah. What were your thoughts when you saw that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's definitely true. Like, it's like you got NBA players going against the other countries in the Olympics. Like, they're a lot better, right? Of course, there's some outliers, but say, like, USA is going against, like, some Middle Eastern country that's not known for basketball, right? Of course, they're going to feel that same energy, but then... Actually, here's a better example. You're going to get lackadaisical in your training, right? If you're always beating everybody. So that's just like, that's always going to happen. You got like these Thai guys that do a seminar. And it's almost like Thai guys will come to America. They'll do a seminar and they'll be like teaching a Thai, like Taiwan 2, jab cross, because they almost think all these Americans don't know shit. It's almost the energy that they give off sometimes. And that has to play into the culture of training. I mean, Mr. Wong said it himself. Of course, there's Thais out there training like fucking madmen. But yeah, man, they definitely have underrated America, because in any country, there's going to be somebody there that's really good. People like that are going to keep popping up here and there. And if the Thai people get lackadaisical, the Thai fighters, and they just keep kicking the Thai pad as hard as they can, and that's their training, we're going to figure out ways to beat you. It's as simple as that. These Russians, you know, these dudes from the UK, they got power in their hands and they're working on, you know, different explosive ways to beat you in your Thai kicks. So I think he's right. I don't remember when he posted that, but yeah, I don't know. Hopefully they don't get lazy, because I'm trying to fight them at their best for sure. Yeah, it's also hard because I understand if you've been training since you were 4 years old, shit gets old, dude.
Luke, my final question for you today is, how would you conceptualize Muay Thai? How would you describe it? What do you think are the key axioms of the concept Muay Thai?
I would say the first part would be your body language. Okay? Starts with your body language, looking like a threat. Okay? And then it comes to like the balance of beautiful violence. So your body looks like a threat, but it also looks elegant and beautiful. And this is the balance of violence and beauty. And then you have your limbs. So you got your body language, threatening, also beautiful. Then you have how you're using your limbs. You're using your limbs as a weapon, and you're also using them the most efficient way, which is also beautiful. You know, so it's like using your body in this way that looks very laid back, very easygoing, but then also having the balance of complete, utter violence. And that's what everyone has always said, beautiful violence. That's Muay Thai. That's why guys aren't just standing there putting their dukes up. They're standing there with this cool, balanced stance, you know? I mean, that actually goes back to ancient times when they had swords in their hands. From ancient Cabri Cabrong, the Thai fighters. I don't know if you know the history of Muay Thai. But yeah, I think it's beautiful violence, and then that's just the breakdown of it.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Luke, for coming back on the show. Is there any final remarks you want to say to everybody listening as we wrap up the podcast?
Nah, man. I mean, just do the same shit I'm doing. Try to stay present. Life's a little bit better. And, enjoy the small victories, man. You know?
Follow Luke Lessie on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you guys next time.
All right, let's go. Combatant.